This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back into the Lions 24/7 podcast. Tyler Donahue and Sean Fitz with you on a beautiful, sunny, and very springy day here in Happy Valley. It's Friday morning, and we're kind of caught in between spring ball and a really, really busy June recruiting month where we're going to have the campus visits and we're going to have the prospect camps and all that coming our way. So we figured right now in between, good time to maybe have a reflective conversation, look back a little bit. And we landed on the 2017 recruiting class because we've got a lot of answers on that group at this point. Several players, more than you would anticipate, maybe remain on campus because of the NCAA eligibility changes. You've got some fifth-year juniors around. And then about half this class has concluded their career elsewhere or continuing their college career elsewhere, a couple in the NFL. So we got a lot to dive into, Sean, there. And this was the class that signed with Penn State coming off of their Big Ten championship run. It was James Franklin's fourth overall class with the Nittany Lions. And this is one that I didn't really cover. I remember my first time on campus covering this program, Sean. Those guys were introduced at the spring football game in 2017. A few of them were already enrolled, of course. But this is a group that I'm going to lean on you in terms of the high school dynamics and the camps and all that. Because aside from Sean Clifford, KJ Hamler, Fred Hansard, some of those other guys, I really didn't do much coverage of this group coming out of high school. So we got a bunch to dive into, and we're both going to bring in, I think, a little bit of a separate perspective, because I'm assuming for many of them, you were on the phone with these guys when they were 15, 16 years old.
Yeah, these are guys that some of this group was in as a freshman. I mean, I remember Lamont Wade camping as a freshman. But yeah, this was a really interesting cycle because, you look at kind of, you're kind of wearing off that new coach bump. You mentioned it was Franklin's fourth full class. Somewhere in between that new coach bump and that Big Ten title was this class. And that's not to knock on it. That's not to pump it up or anything like that. But it was just a very interesting cycle because it finished strong, no doubt about it, after the Big Ten title game. But you think about 2016, the summer of 2016, you know, magical Big Ten title ahead. You know, Franklin, I don't want to say it was on the hot seat, but there were plenty of questions, especially coming after that 2015 season. So there were so many things that was up and down. I kind of wrote down it was a slow start, but if you look at how they started, it really wasn't that. It was just kind of a lull right in the middle. And that's something that we've kind of gotten used to in the last couple of cycles. But that's how it was in the 2017 class. 21 signees, number 15 in the composite. You mentioned 9 of them did not finish their college careers at Penn State. It's actually a pretty decent hit rate when you think about it. And everybody, you know, we get excited about all the commitments every year, but in the end, you know, a little more than half usually is a good number. And that's kind of where they finished in 2017. So some studs, some real studs in this group, some guys that were highly rated that, you know, maybe didn't live up to those expectations. And it was just kind of a great mixed bag of where everything stood at this point. And again, it was a fascinating dynamic because you go into the season thinking, okay, Franklin's got to do something or he gets fired. You get to the end of the first month and you're thinking, okay, that's really true. And then a few months later, you're celebrating a Big Ten title in Indianapolis.
Right. And then this is followed by, you know, where you're really letting that Big Ten championship run sink in with the high school juniors and sophomores at the time. You end up with back-to-back top 10 recruiting classes in 18 and 19. And to your point, when they really got building the foundation of this 2017 recruiting class, there was, you know, there wasn't a lot of solid footing for James Franklin to stand on coming from the sanction era at Penn State. Obviously, that was in play. But the main thing was the win and loss column. And to your point, what was it 14 and 12 through the first couple of seasons, 2-2 through that first month? So you when you recruit the 18 class and you circle back and bring guy like Parsons on board, you have that Big Ten bump and you have another strong run, another 11 win season. This was a group getting put together by a 7-win program that was still recovering from what happened earlier in the decade.
Yeah, and you had the guys in the prior class like Shane Simmons and Miles Sanders who committed very early, obviously the highly rated guys, that great offensive line class that they brought in 2015 as well. So you were kind of, as I said, coming off of that hill for the new coach bump. It was kind of prove it because you had a new quarterback in Trace McSorley at this point. And it's interesting because we'll tie, and we did this to start, you'll tie the Big Ten title to this group, but you really didn't see the effects of the Big Ten title until that 2018 cycle. Tariq Castro Fields, probably the one in this class that it would have made a difference for. And, you know, it did, no doubt about it. He came in and really set up an official or really game high on Penn State after that Big Ten title and that late run. And it was kind of a organic, magical time, I guess you could call it, but it was really kind of unmatched in what they were able to do. So Castro Fields was probably the only product of that. Maybe the run that they went on got you Fred Hanser, but I'm not sure, you know, he was committed to Florida at the time, but I'm not sure how much, you know, if that would have happened without that run, you know what I'm saying? So right. Very, very interesting group at the top of the board. Lamont Wade is ranked as your number one composite guy. That's largely dependent on that Rivals 5-star ranking that we've talked about a bunch, that was way too high, obviously in hindsight. So, you look at the group and you got some contributors and a lot of that top part hit. I think Yetur Gross-Matos is probably your linchpin of the class, maybe KJ Hamler, but we probably got to see a little bit more of Gross-Matos. So a good group across the board, but I guess we'll start at the bottom. You got 9 guys that didn't finish their career at Penn State, and some of these you could see coming. This is a really interesting dynamic that Tyler and I were talking about before that went on the show. We've kind of hammered home talking about getting verified measurements and getting what you need to evaluate these players and getting all the information available. And there's 4 big misses here and evaluation misses, which you don't see a ton of those with Penn State anymore. But back at the time, Robert Martin was not a Division I athlete, and he spent 1 year and then moved on. And I think he finished his, I don't want to speak for him finishing, but he stayed at Penn State. Corey Bolds, they took at the last second. That's kind of the redeeming quality for the Bolds commitment was, okay, they had 1 scholarship left over. They gave him a call at the end. His recruitment started out on a high note. A bunch of schools were interested. A bunch of schools then tailed off, including Penn State. Penn State came right at the end. We've talked about throwing numbers at that position at defensive tackle. That's what they did. Bolds was out after a year. He was not a guy that was going to play at this level. Braylon Faison-Walden was probably the most surprising one, because if you look at his offer list and you look at the schools that were pursuing him, Michigan was hard on him. A couple other, you know, good schools were hard on him. And Penn State, that seemed like a really good recruiting win at the time. He got here, wasn't as athletic. He had some injury issues in high school. Wasn't really the guy that filled out. He eventually transferred to Charlotte. I don't think he's on the roster anymore. And then Braylon Franklin, which was a complete projection by the staff, probably a Division I athlete in terms of testing numbers and things like that, just not a Division I linebacker, and then eventually not a Division I defensive end. So to me, when you're talking about misses, and you can deal with injury misses or guys that maybe get passed up by guys that are more talented, but these were 4. And when you're talking about a class of 21, 4 of 21 that were poor evaluations, bad evaluations, that one stings.
As you said, you look at where those guys landed after Happy Valley. It tells the story of kind of how they were evaluated as football talents at this level. You had Braylon Faison-Walden going to North Carolina, Charlotte. You mentioned Sam Houston State for Braylon Franklin, both those guys, linebackers, and Robert Martin.
Not a good cycle for Braylon's. Let's put it that way.
Exactly. And Robert Martin, football career just came to a halt. And Corey Bolds went the JUCO route, was with ASA College in Brooklyn. I know he was committed to I believe walk on at Rutgers.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was under the Chris Ash regime. And I know that it just never materialized when Shiano came in. He didn't end up on the Rutgers roster. I don't know what's going on with Corey Bolds at this point in his athletic career, but yeah, as you said, it became pretty apparent early on for those 4 guys that it was not in the cards at Penn State. They moved on. Other players worked their way out of town too.
So Martin was an interesting one to me because he played for Augie Hoffman at St. Joe's Montvale, which, as you know, produces some of the best offensive linemen, high school offensive linemen in the country. Really, it's just Augie's a great coach, and they coach him up right. And that may have been a situation where he was so well coached in high school. You can look away from the other things, the athletic testing and things like that. You thought, okay, you can talk yourself into having a high floor. He came in, he was testing at a walk-on level, if that, and that was like, from there, it was like, oh, we definitely missed. Now, to their credit, I mean, he was only around for a year, and to his credit, he stuck around it and went to school, but it was just like, okay, that's the rationalization for that. And you can make arguments for all these guys, because it's all hindsight and it's all, happy stuff. But that was one where you thought, okay, he's well coached. Maybe he's a technician. Maybe he's a guy that, can make things work despite some athletic shortcomings. And it just doesn't happen. Cause when you step onto that field, I mean, people get mad all the time about, okay, you're selling the little guy short and things like that. And there's, every time you mention a 5'11" linebacker, there's a list of five exceptions to the rule where you don't talk about the other 1,000 that don't hit. So that's kind of where we're at with that. When you get into that locker room, when you start testing with Dwight Gault and you can't keep up with the other guys around you, that's a serious red flag there. And you saw it, and none of these guys were on campus all that long. And it's really not surprising looking back.
It's glaring once you hit that practice field too. And I think it becomes pretty apparent for the player and the coaching staff that it's not going to materialize. And you can be a good soldier, you can be a great locker room guy, and you can hang around and work toward your degree. But oftentimes, if you want to play, you got to find another path and you got to make that move pretty quickly, as some of these guys did. By the way, we mentioned before recording the numbers and how underwhelming they were for Robert Martin. I don't want to dump on the kid, but we talked so much during this pause and visits and camps during the past year about the need for verifiable measurements. They had all that information for Robert Martin. The coaching staff has evolved. I mean, is there any way possible you could see a player producing those kind of test results and even sniffing a scholarship offer from Penn State here entering the summer of 2021?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they are overly cautious about that stuff now. And these are, sort of cautionary tales. And I get why. It's sort of, that's the evolution that we've seen. And I know it's only been 4 years, but that's kind of the evolution that we've seen with them checking and double checking. Guys get frustrated when you put on, Robert Martin's tape was not horrible. Like, he was a well-coached offensive lineman, and, it kind of showed through. And then, this is a different level. And that's kind of the takeaway from that.
Sean, the one thing I will say about Bowles is you always kind of put him, he was always the guy that was with Rashawn Gary at every camp. Now, a year younger than Rashawn Gary, but played at Paramus Catholic together. It was a stacked Paramus Catholic team, a bunch of Power 5 players. And I don't know if that helped build up Bowles. I'm certain it helped build up Bowles' profile. You just wonder how that played a role in him getting to the point where he had some Power 5 options at the end, ending up with Penn State very quickly. Leaving this level of college football.
I mean, he was going to Rutgers. Like, there was no question about it. And Penn State called, I think Franklin called him up at like 4:30 on signing day. They kind of kept him warm to that point and said, okay, if we have a scholarship, we'll let you know. And he said, okay, let me know. And I assume Rutgers had like the graphics ready and stuff for him to sign. And then he hopped on board with Penn State, and that's kind of how it works. And we've seen guys like that in the past. And honestly, the hit rate's not tremendous. Brennan Thrift from Lackawanna is one that kind of jumps out there. It's a really dicey game when you're going at the last second. Now, I think you didn't see that this year. You probably have learned from that situation before. Now, they took Kevin Givens at the last minute, but they knew what Kevin Givens was. Or at least
Daquan Hardy was like a last minute guy.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Torrance Brown was one when they just got here. You've grabbed those guys at the last second. There's been success, but I think you could probably kind of see that one coming.
Other guys who did not end up getting to the finish line here with Penn State, although, we got a guy like CJ Thorpe who graduated from Penn State. He posted a photo of in his cap and gown this week. Congratulations to him. But he's still got two years of eligibility. He's mentioned before he wants to play defensive line. Really, I mean, we're talking about the top rated lineman in this 2017 class, ended up working his way into the rotation at defensive tackle during his second year on campus, was thrust into that role against Ohio State. And now we look at where his career has gone. We felt, I think, both that he was going to seize that opportunity at right guard and really kind of hold that role and impress. And it just never came to fruition. He was in that rotation for a while with Mike Miranda. Then there was a rotation last year where he was getting pulled off the field. You saw Will Fries end up at right guard. CJ Thorpe wasn't seen on the field the last few weeks of the season. And now he's looking for a new home. That's to be determined. But what do you make of CJ Thorpe, who came in from Western Pennsylvania, a top 100 overall prospect, and a guy that, you know, we talked about promise on both sides of the ball. We saw quite a bit of him in a Penn State uniform, but not to the point where, you know, he had a full-time role in his possession.
That one's going to eat at me for a while, because I've always been really high on CJ Thorpe. You know, you saw him in high school. He was kind of a wrecking ball. I think there's probably a mashing of personalities, which kind of, you know, started as a slow burn. And by the end, it was, you know, it was time to part ways. So I've always been high on his talent in terms of what he's been able to do. I like the way that he plays the game, maybe goes a little bit too far sometimes. He's had some penalties to his name, but he plays physical. And generally, one of the bigger surprises from the last 2 years in terms of how we thought he would take to maybe this Kirk Schirock offense. Okay, they're going to run the ball. That's great news for CJ Thorpe, because he's always been a run blocker, always had to work on his pass protection. So I don't have an answer for that one, because I think he's a talented kid. I think he can go somewhere, and I think he can make an impact. He wants to be a defensive tackle, and more power to him. But that's one that certainly was a miss. I know I've talked to Doan about this one before. Is we thought, in terms of evaluating offensive linemen, which is extremely hard, and it's probably the hardest one to do, or the hardest position to do, we thought it was a pretty safe bet that he was going to be successful, be a multi-year starter. It just never came around. So sometimes that happens, and it's unfortunate. And like you said, he did play a decent amount, but when you compare him side by side with Mike Miranda, the thing was always, okay, Miranda's got the higher floor, Thorpe's got the higher ceiling. Well, you don't develop the way you think he's going to, that you're never going to reach that ceiling. And now all of a sudden Mike Miranda is a 3-year starter and is going to be the linchpin of your offensive line at center. So that's an interesting correlation when you put these guys side by side year to year. I don't have an answer for CJ Thorpe. I thought he would be better. I thought he'd have a bigger impact, and I'm kind of disappointed, because I really liked him as a prospect.
May not have materialized for him on the field. I will say, big time impact on campus, though, as a Penn State student working toward his degree. I mean, this is a guy who was very active among his peers, and you know, I think made his mark within the Penn State community, and moving forward should be proud of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on, there's different reasons the guys didn't pan out. Donovan Johnson, fully injury. I mean, this is, it sucks to watch a guy. I mean, we've talked about that story with Nick Tarbert and how we kind of kept expecting, you know, a medical retirement to come or something like that. But Donovan Johnson just, time after time, couldn't get healthy. And it wasn't like it was the same injury over and over again. Had a really good spring a couple of years ago, and he was in that starting nickelback spot. Good speed, good ball skills, had a lot of things that you like. It's just, he came back and just kept getting hurt. I believe his last one was an Achilles, which is kind of the death knell to a small, speedy guy. So they played without him last year, and he's off the roster now, which is not a surprise. But man, that's a tough break for a really talented, really athletic kid.
That retirement confirmed this offseason. And so Johnson was a 4-star. You had CJ Thorpe as a 4-star. And you also had one out of Harrisburg and Damian Barber on the defensive line. We mentioned a few other linemen here in the conversation with Bowles leaving and Martin leaving and of course CJ Thorpe. And here's Barber, who came in late with this class. Remember, he had some academic fulfillments that he had to get done before he could join them on campus. That set him back a bit. He was transitioning from defensive end to defensive tackle. And obviously, with Barber, a guy that we thought there was an opportunity, I believe during the 2019 season, for him to seize, did not come together. And he ends up at Austin Peay last year, taking that step down in terms of competition. And, you know, ultimately out of Harrisburg, you got Micah Parsons the year later, but you didn't get kind of, we thought there's a chance for two Harrisburg players there to really make a big dent in the defense in 2019, but didn't come together for Barber.
Yeah, I was high on Barber as well. He had a really great senior year playing defensive end. You always projected him, because of, you know, his kind of big size and features. You always project him to move to the interior and then be a really athletic defensive tackle. Just didn't come together. I mean, he added that weight, and you just didn't see the same player. I lump him in. I've got three guys here in the 2017 class that you kind of lump together as, you know, Division I athletes, like guys that probably were who you thought they were as athletes, but kind of got passed up and passed over. So you got Barber, you got Matt Kippenhammer, who obviously had the issues with the drops, and guys came in and sort of took his job. And then DJ Brown, who was a really athletic kid, just came into a room where everybody was better than him. And that's kind of, so he's probably between category one and category two there. But yeah, Barber is a guy that out of that three that I had the highest hopes for. Again, when you take a defensive end and move him to the interior, if he's a great athlete or a good athlete on the edge, he's probably a great athlete in the interior, just never came along. I think some off-field issues certainly came into play here. You mentioned he showed up late. He had the academic issues, and that was kind of a harbinger for what would happen in the next couple of years, and that's unfortunate. So, but Barber's certainly another guy that they had really high hopes for, and just never came to fruition. I think again, there's a myriad of reasons that you could throw in front of that one. It's just it didn't work out.
Barber at Austin Peay. You've got DJ Brown at Louisiana Tech now, and Hippenhammer at Miami of Ohio, where he is also playing baseball. Remember, he was a multi-sport athlete here at Penn State. And so, Sean, we've kind of worked our way through guys who didn't make it to the end with the program, and right there, ranked 20th out of 21 players in this class, a guy who didn't complete his college career, resulting in what I think will be remembered as one of the great what ifs when you look at Penn State football players and guys who didn't get that chance to blossom. Journey Brown. I mean, it's something we've hammered home so much during the past year. Just what we saw in 2019 when he took the ball in November and ran with it through the Cotton Bowl. I mean, there was a reason there was a conversation about him being the top running back, maybe off the board in a class that featured Travis Etienne, Najee Harris. And I couldn't help but watching that draft a couple of weeks ago, just feeling and you know, for Journey Brown and what he must be going through and him, his family, he is still with the program. He's still providing a positive presence for Jaywan Sutter in that running back room. But again, just one of the really, truly shortchanged athletic careers for a guy who could have been a superstar on the track and field circuit as a professional if he chose to do it. And certainly, I think, would have had a lot of opportunities to reach the NFL and shine on that stage after coming from relative obscurity as a recruit.
Yeah, it's always one of those what might have been stories. And it sucks. I mean, of all the things, you know, it's sometimes you just got to concede that life sucks sometimes. And that's really where you're at with Journey Brown. I really made the most of his opportunity. Again, hopefully that's a story told in the future in terms of what he's overcome to get where he needed to be. And he was right there and ready to go. And then all of a sudden just kind of had it all taken away. It's not a decision that he made. It's not something where he got in trouble and all of a sudden he was out of it. It's just your heart doesn't work. Like, what are you going to do about that? And that just sucks. And there's completely out of your hands. I fully believe he would have been a high draft pick, probably a second round, third round guy as a running back. That's pretty good. But yeah, just to think of what we had in front of us, with Micah Parsons, with Journey Brown, with some of these guys, and just kind of had it all taken away for different reasons. That's tough to stomach if you're a Penn State football fan.
Journey Brown for a stretch there, six games or so, flashed as much as anybody in this class. I would include KJ Hamler in that conversation. I'd include Yitor Grosmatos and him playing his best football of his career. What we saw from Journey Brown goes up there with anybody in this class, not as a sustained thing over a span of years, but for that stretch of the season, really special stuff. Let's look at the top of that class, Sean, because the names are very familiar up there. The guys that are still with the program, guys that have started a bunch of games. Lamont Wade was the number one player, as you said. The Rivals five-star rating and where they had him really contributed to his stock in terms of the composite. But he did come in ranked as the number 43 player in that composite, guy who was one of three players in that freshman class who burned a red shirt. You had him, Yitor Grosmatos, and Tariq Castro Fields. Wade came in as a cornerback, ends up as a safety and a two-year starter there, and now a seventh-round pick. I'm sorry, now an undrafted free agent to the Pittsburgh Steelers just a couple weeks ago. I know it's hard to say, what do you make of Lamont Wade's career, but you got a 2-year starter at the back end of this deal. You didn't get an All-American level talent, which I think some people were probably looking at the hype when he came to campus and thinking that was the inevitable conclusion of his career. What do we make of Mr. Wade's time in Happy Valley?
Well, I mean, you look at what you got out of him a couple years as a starter. Obviously, if you don't pay attention to recruiting rankings. I mean, that's a solid contribution. But unfortunately, that's kind of how things are judged when you're coming in here. So I think it's safe to say that those expectations were fallen short of. You just kind of got to go with it, and that, you know, he's signed with the Steelers. So obviously there's somebody that sees some talent there. But this is a guy that was always too high. And that's unfortunate, that we have to classify him in that way, because, you know, you've had some guys that have made some really good. I mean, you think back to that Ohio State game in 2019, he made some really good plays and showed some flashes, but, just in terms of across the board, the rating was too high. And that's, it sounds like you're dumping on a kid when you say that, but that's kind of the nature of the beast these days.
Wade is the third player from this 2017 class to land on an NFL roster. You had him preceded last year by Yetur Gross-Matos, a second round pick of the Carolina Panthers, and KJ Hamler, a second round pick of the Denver Broncos at receiver. Each of those guys, I mean, I think of Yetur Gross-Matos, and I know the spotlight was really on him during the 2019 year, but it was his 2018 season as a sophomore to me that I'll remember. He was a wrecking ball in Big Ten play. He was conference player of the week, I think, against Iowa. Other games where he really determined the impact. The outcome for matchups wasn't a fantastic season in 2018 for Penn State by any stretch of the imagination, how that turned out. But Yetur Gross-Matos was a major bright spot. And that was KJ Hamler's coming out year. Redshirt freshman, game number one, Appalachian State. All he does is set up for the game time drive at the end of regulation with a kickoff return, catches a touchdown to tie things up for McSorley. And eventually over the next couple of years, easily the leading receiver for Penn State during those 2 years. And one of the more explosive playmakers across college football, and a guy who's, you know, really showed some flashes of exactly that against NFL competition last fall.
Yeah, that's I mean, he's such an electric player, and he was a guy that I'm looking at his profile right now. We had him at 5'9", 156. I mean, that's a little guy, and plus that knee injury. So there were plenty of questions about Hamler coming in.
I think that's a legit 156 too, from what I remember seeing KJ at that age.
Tiny, absolutely. Yeah. Tiny. We missed on that one. So we're doing all these with the composite rankings, and I opened a bunch of these profiles, and honestly, most of these 4-star guys we had as 3-star guys on 24/7. That's including KJ Hamler. We had him as an 88, high 3-star. I think that's more a product of him playing in the slot than anything. And of course he didn't get his senior season at IMG. So there's the excuses made for that one. But this was Josh Gattis's top wide receiver target. I know there were some other guys. I think Mark Webb was in this class. Some other guys that, you know, maybe were a little bit closer to home or kind of had more fanfare, but Gattis, to his credit, has always been very good at evaluating wide receivers. Hasn't always landed them. Hasn't always, you know, come through and, he nailed KJ Hamler, and that was a big one for him. So, what else can you say about that? I mean, you're turning a low 4-star composite, high 3-star 24/7 guy into a second round pick, coming off of a knee injury where he missed an entire year or two entire years, basically. That's a pretty good return, and that's pretty good job of development for it. And I don't think probably Penn State probably doesn't get enough credit for developing Hamler since he only had the big year, but that's kind of how it works in college football, unfortunately.
And then going back to Yetur Gross-Matos, I know that 2019 was the year he was in the spotlight and was being discussed as a potential first-round pick in the ensuing draft, but I'll remember that stretch in 2018, Sean, during the Big Ten conference push. It wasn't a great season by any stretch of the imagination for Penn State, finishing 9-4, but major bright spot was certainly KJ Hamler's emergence, as we just discussed, but also Yetur Gross-Matos as a sophomore, really just a dominant effort, 20 tackles for loss, and really just put himself on everybody's NFL draft board. Probably didn't come to fruition as much as people had hoped during his 2019 campaign, a bit neutralized with more attention in some key moments, but very clearly coming out of Penn State as a second round pick to the Carolina Panthers, a guy that was valued by Matt Rhule and that organization, and brings some versatility to the defensive front. A major hit for Penn State with Yetur.
Yeah, he was my favorite player in the class. And, you know, I think he kind of, you know, what he went in the 40s or something like that in the draft. So it's a pretty good return on that one. Again, yeah, you always talking about what if in terms of production. And you mentioned that 2019 season, but I think that's a pretty good return. Really, really good player. You know, I don't know that he's going to go down as one of the greats or anything like that, but really, really good player. And I think he's probably, yeah, with him and KJ, that's who you got the most out of in this class. You know, you play what might've been with Journey Brown, but those two, you know, stepped up and were second round picks. And that's a, you know, quite a bit above their, above the recruiting level.
they earned that ability to make a wise decision in leaving after their third year on campus. And it paid off for each of them. And by the way, two guys at the focal point of this class there, are there two different personalities? I mean, the Etor versus KJ, it's funny how those guys are so different, so effective at Penn State in their own style. Sean Clifford, I talk about a name that we have mentioned a lot on this podcast and will continue to do so. He was a 4-star in the composite. He was a 3-star by 24/7 Sports, committed very early to Penn State, about halfway through his high school career, was an Elite 11 finalist. He wasn't in that very top tier of guys that I saw at the Elite 11 competition that year, Tua Tagovailoa, Jake Fromm. But on that next level, I would say, with a guy like Sam Ellinger, went to Texas, and we've seen a lot of Sean Clifford now, 4,700 passing yards, 41 touchdowns, 16 interceptions in his Penn State career. Sean, there's not much more we can add to this. The story is still yet to be written on what his career will come out to do. He's got two more years of eligibility should he choose to use them at the collegiate level. But here we are, and approaching the summer of 2021, like it or not, for fans out there, pretty on question as the starting quarterback, a third-year starter. So you're squeezing a lot out of your quarterback spot in that 2017 class. And really since then, it's been difficult for Penn State to keep guys on campus for a sustained period of time.
Yeah, no way around. That's kind of the risk you take when that's kind of the double-edged sword. When you have a three-year starter in McSorley, when you have a three-year starter in Clifford, there's going to be different residuals down the line in that quarterback room. I remember Steve took a beating on our board, insisted that Clifford was a high 3-star guy, and that's kind of how he's turned out to be. So, unfortunately Steve was right on that one, more so than the other services. But yeah, this is one where the story's yet to be written. As you said, you still got guys like, Fred Hansard is still here, and Ellis Brooks is still here, and Sutherland, and Mike Miranda has turned himself or has had a good career so far. So still there's some left to get out of that 2017 class. Tariq Castro Fields, who, didn't use a red shirt, and he's back for his fifth year. So there's still a lot that's out there. I don't want to say what could have been for a guy like Journey Brown, but they're guys that are certainly still willing to write their legacy in this class.
Who do you think? You just mentioned a bunch of names, and I'm going to throw another one your way. Cam Sullivan Brown at wide receiver, who's competing to start, battling with Keandre Lambert Smith to play alongside Parker Washington and Jahan Dotson. Whoever wins that job, we're still going to see a lot of the other guys. So Cam Sullivan Brown has an opportunity here. Des Holmes, you've mentioned this, terrible time for him to be sidelined this spring with that left guard spot open, and Eric Wilson coming in via transfer out of Harvard. That's a guy that we're looking at closely. But you mentioned Sutherland trying to be a starter. Ellis Brooks is trying to step up as the sure middle linebacker and a guy who's going to take a step forward. And then, you've got a guy, as you mentioned, Tariq Castro Fields stuck around for another year. Who out of this mix of players who are still around has the highest ceiling, you think, by the end of their college career to really make something special happen?
I think it's Castro Fields, and I don't know that it's particularly close, probably because we've seen a little bit more from him. Sutherland obviously has a chance to start this year. Holmes has a chance to start this year. Sullivan Brown, a chance to start this year. Not unquestioned starters in your fifth year junior or whatever they call them here. But so that's kind of, I think you're going into 2017, and Castro Fields has sort of established himself. I know Ellis Brooks has sort of established himself, by the way, first round mock for Ellis Brooks this week. That was,
you mentioned that. Wow. I did not think you would mention that.
I'm sorry, man. You were very busy yesterday with some important stuff, and I still sent that link to you just because I had to see somebody. If there's any question on where the brand Sports Illustrated is right now, I'm sorry. And it sounds like I'm crapping on Ellis Brooks, but a first round pick. Come on now.
Crapping on Sports Illustrated, which is a magazine I grew up reading religiously on a weekly
basis. It's a very different company than it used to be. It's very different than the magazine that you used to get. And it's really in the worst possible way. I mean that, but that's certainly interesting. Back to your original question. Yeah. Tariq Castro Fields is that guy. I had to sneak that mock draft in there cause it was just so bad. I think Castro Fields is the guy that you sort of lean on, and the guy that has a chance to help himself out the most. Again, Miranda could turn into a pro. high floor guy, the ceiling, you weren't sure what it was, but hey, man, those guys are successful in college football sometimes. And Miranda's been that so far. You hope he can sort of hold down the middle this year. I don't know that he's going to be a guy that's drafted. I don't know if he's going to be a guy that comes out and tests exceedingly well, but he's going to put a lot on tape. And so far, I think what he was second team all Big Ten last year. So he certainly impressed somebody.
Well, 4 years after that signing day for this group, you've got, you got three guys in the NFL. You got a few guys out of football, and you've got a bunch that Penn State is depending on here in 2021 to make things happen all over the football field, both sides of the ball. So this class, we still don't know, we're going to put the punctuation mark at the end of it in a couple years down the road. You may see, I know you said 6 year seniors isn't something that Penn State is in love with, but you may see someone from this class, maybe a couple guys from this class, back here next season. So a couple more chapters, but to this stage, you talked about this kind of being a class caught in the middle of two Penn State eras under James Franklin. Well, what are your thoughts 4 years out of it? And really for you, 7-8 years of covering this group.
Some ups and downs, and you'll have that with every class. I think they've gotten some quality contributions. It's interesting. This would have been a good class to have. I think it started the four game redshirt rule started the year after this class. So you would have liked to see what you had in a couple of guys there, and maybe I don't know, Castro Fields, and redshirts are kind of irrelevant with guys that went to the pros like Yetur Gross-Matos. But you would have liked to see a little bit more out of those guys. Again, some bad misses. And I think that the Penn State's really minimized those in the last couple of cycles. And I think that's something that you can take away from this in terms of, okay, you don't want to miss on it like a Robert Martin or a Corey Bowles or something like that again. So they've done a nice job in terms of if you're going to miss big or miss athletic. And, that's kind of the way that you got to go about it. So there will be misses, undoubtedly. That's college football. That's college football recruiting. But if you're going to miss big or miss fast. And for a couple of these guys, they didn't miss either of those.
And it felt like the front seven on defense was particularly impacted by some of the things that didn't happen for this class. We mentioned some defensive linemen, some linebackers. I'm not sure how that plays into the way this team has come together in 2021, but it's something that stood out to me on the negative end when reviewing this class, and just in terms of what did not materialize in 4 years.
And speaking of not materializing, it's worth mentioning two D commitments in this cycle, and one that you really, really thought was going to sting in Dylan Rivers, because he was committed very early. He was all Penn State for the longest time, ended up coming to his official visit and flipping to Virginia Tech and telling the coaches in person and ticking off everybody within a 5 mile radius of that building. But he did nothing at Virginia Tech, which was a surprise to me. I thought he was a really good linebacker, really good prospect. So who knows what might've been there. Derek Pitts was a surprise when he committed to Penn State over West Virginia. Eventually did end up flipping to West Virginia, got into some trouble there. I think he ended up at Marshall. Both those guys, you don't want to play what might have been, but Dylan Rivers obviously did not flip for the positive there in terms of on the field stuff. Derek Pitts, I don't know if he would have gotten in trouble here or not, but he was a really, really good athlete, a guy that they really liked a lot, but there was some off field questions. So the decommitments, as we see happen many times, did not have the effect that we thought they would in terms of those guys panning out elsewhere.
One last line here. The Pennsylvania class in 2017, Penn State signed two of the top five guys in Wade and Thorpe. The other three in that mix, according to 24/7 Sports rankings, number five, Josh Lugg going to the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, an offensive lineman, Paris Ford, defensive back going to Pitt. And then DeAndre Swift, of course, a star running back out of Philadelphia, five-star kid, ending up in the SEC with Georgia.
Yeah, you look down that class and not great. I mean, DeAndre Swift, obviously the big name and, the most success there. Paris Ford, a very good college safety, and then went undrafted this year. David Adams, who was a really good linebacker at Central Catholic, had a lot of injury problems at Notre Dame. And that was a guy that, Penn State fans were belly aching about missing in the first place, and he never made an impact there. Mark Webb, I don't know what to make of Mark Webb's career. He would have been a wide receiver at Penn State, went to Georgia, played corner, and it caught on with the pros in the draft. I think he got drafted. I can't remember if he's a late round pick or whatever. But yeah,
he was in round seven to the Chargers. I remember that popping up because he was a really interesting prospect, because you couldn't really figure out what he was going to be program to program when discussing his recruitment back in high school.
Yeah, Kurt Hinnish at Notre Dame has turned into a really good player. Zane Zandier is a guy that I kind of beat the drum for during that cycle because you thought Penn State might need a linebacker. You saw what they took in Braylon Franklin and Braylon Faison-Walden, and they, of course, had Dylan Rivers. So it was a guy that you thought you may be able to have on a hook. He had a really good career at Virginia. So obviously a smart move on that part, but you kind of think of what if when you go back there. Kenny Robinson, went to West Virginia, had a really good freshman year, didn't really pan out. I think he ended up going into the XFL draft early or something like that. So you just keep going down the list, and I'm not seeing anybody that really jumps out at me and says, okay, Penn State should have gone after him. Raheem Blackshear was a player I was always high on, but not at this level. And he's made some, I think he's been to three different schools now, but he's made an impact at all three, I believe. So nothing really that takes you back and says, okay, you should have gone after that guy. Kyle McCloskey.
I got a name for you.
Do you? Where are we? Yeah. Have I not gotten that far yet? Oh, yeah. There it is.
You found it? Who is it?
Geno Stone.
Yeah, there we go.
Geno Stone. I actually was thinking he was the class before this.
Number 41 in the state of Pennsylvania.
In the composite. We actually had him 27 in the 24/7 sports rankings. So, that was definite miss. He's below Kyle McCloskey, who ended up being a walk-on basketball player at Penn State. So, yeah, that was a big miss there. A good, really good evaluation job by Iowa. Another safety in that class, Jaquan Amos, went to Villanova, had a really good career, and now he will end his career at Iowa State. So, yeah, I was a year off on that Geno Stone. I'm a big fan of Geno Stone when he was in high school. It just never came to fruition, and he kind of made the most of his time in Iowa City.
All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. We spent probably more time on that than we anticipated. Hopefully you stuck with us and, fun going down the recruiting trail a little bit. And we always focus, but
I got one more for you. The number 71 was a tight end out of Strathaven. It was committed to Army. He played a little center for Penn State this year in basketball, and he's back for next year as well.
Oh, there you go. You dug really. I didn't know that there was 71 guys ranked for a state.
We got 82. Maybe. We got 82. 81 was ended up being a walk-on long snapper at Penn State, or excuse me, at Pitt. So, okay. Yeah, that class rolled deep. It wasn't the best in Penn State's history or Pennsylvania's history. I'll say that.
Journey Brown, by the way, number 16 on that list, and a guy that exceeded a lot of expectations in the state of Pennsylvania. Sean, we'll turn our attention to the five-star mailbag coming up. We'll put a cap on that conversation for now with the 2017 class. Again, they are not done yet. There's a lot of guys on the field this year for Penn State from that group in year number 5 at the college level. Stay with us here on the Lions 24/7 podcast. Plenty more to come.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear.
We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back, finishing up with a few NFL notes and the five-star mailbag. Sean, the season opener and the entire slate for the 2021 NFL season has been announced. We're not going to wait long to see Micah Parsons in action, and he's not going to wait long for his first major NFL challenge going up against Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the defending Super Bowl champions. So Parsons step right into the spotlight with America's team on Thursday Night Football kickoff matchup. And on the other side of the field, you'll have Chris Godwin at wide receiver, Donovan Smith at left tackle for the Bucs. Both those guys rewarded financially this offseason. And by the way, Sean, Steven Gonzalez resurfacing. I wasn't sure if he was a guy we'd see, you know, in the NFL landscape. He's got a contract with the Bills. Going to be a long road ahead for him to try to earn a roster spot with one of the league's best team, but he reunites with Ryan Bates. Those guys signed together with Penn State five, 6 years ago at this point. Bates, a third-year player with the Bills. Gonzalez, undrafted last year, spent some time with the Arizona Cardinals, preseason cuts, did not land with the team. Here he is. Good luck to him, signing in May with the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I think he was going to play in that spring football league or something like that, which I don't know if he ever made it to that, but he was going to do that. And he's worked his butt off, man. He came back to pro day, worked out there, and obviously, you know, didn't catch on with the Cardinals last year. But hey, everybody's got a shot. He's a big guy. He's a strong guy, and to be able to bounce back after going undrafted, being cut, not playing anywhere, not even being on a practice squad or anything like that, to get signed the next year, that takes some special dedication. I think it's worth noting for Steven that he, you know, really put the work into to be where he needs to be.
By the way, Mark Brennan, our colleague at Lions 24/7, has a good, great rundown week by week of where you're going to want to focus in on the NFL. Maybe something to bookmark for when we get closer to the fall, but a bunch of a Penn State, you know, prominent games in the future, and a lot of those out of the NFC East, as we discussed coming out of the draft. By the way, Penn State leading receiver all time, Deshaun Hamilton, was reportedly released on Thursday, Sean, but then some backpedaling there. It sounds like by the Denver Broncos, receiving some trade in interest, and maybe that's possible now, but it certainly sounds like he'll be on the move. He spent last year with KJ Hamler in that receiver room. He was a mid-round pick coming out of Penn State, despite those gaudy stats, but it sounds like he'll be playing for someone else in 2021. Just wanted to drop that in here as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's depending on when you listen to this podcast, it could very well change with Deshaun Hamilton. It did, I think, two or three times yesterday.
Let's get to our five-star mailbag now. We've got a few questions to get to. It's been great up there on Apple Podcasts, seeing you guys throw your questions toward us. Leave your five-star rating and review. Anything you want to talk about, put it on the table. We'll try to address it here on the show. And we'll start with one on recruiting. How realistic is it for Penn State to ultimately sign two top running back recruits in the 2022 class? And the key word there for me is top running back recruits.
Yeah,
top.
You look at what's on the board. There's a bunch of running backs there. Very few guys, I guess, you could qualify as top. You know, I think there's no doubt in my mind, Omarion Hampton and Nick Singleton are the top guys on the board. So when you're talking about the realistic possibility for signing two top ones, I think it's very, very low chance that they sign both of those guys. Well, that would be incredible. I mean, that would, you couldn't quantify how great of a class, a running back class that would be. It would kind of be like, it would probably be on par with Ohio State's last year when they took Trevion Henderson and Evan Pryor, which you don't see a ton. But if you landed those two guys, that would be a ridiculous job by Jawan Sider. I don't think that's going to happen. I think you probably get one of those guys. And right now things seem to be trending well with Nick Singleton, but we probably don't talk about Amari Hampton enough. I think he's a tremendously talented guy. I think he's right there on the level with Singleton. You know, maybe have a little bit more development left in him than Singleton, which is intriguing when you think about it. But Penn State is doing very well with him. I think North Carolina's in there. Ohio State seems to have turned the heat up. With running back recruiting, I think Dallin Hayden's very important because he's a Penn State target. Penn State likes him a whole lot, but that's the guy that you keep pointing to Ohio State to say, okay, this is going to be Ohio State's back, which won't completely take them out for Singleton, for Hampton, those guys, because, you know, every school, if you can get two talented ones, is going to take two talented ones. That includes Alabama, who's now pushing for Singleton as well. And also has Hampton on their board. And they have a five-star already. And of course they do. But that's a very interesting dynamic with those two. And then you get to that next level, mentioned Hayden, George Pettaway is taking an official visit. Ramon Brown's taking an official visit. See, to me, if you're classifying, can you land two top ones? You land one of those top two in Hampton or Singleton, and then you land maybe Ramon Brown, maybe George Pettaway.
Those are four stars.
That would be a fantastic haul. I mean, I don't think I can stress that just because they're not both Hampton and Singleton. That would be a fantastic haul. There's a bunch of other guys out there. Damari Alston's taking a visit. Some Southern guys, Quinshawn Junkins has always been interested. We did a mini board at the end of March, and that kind of pretty much still rings true in terms of what's going on the pulse of running back recruiting. And then Jaywon Sider always seems to be in Florida. So there's a couple guys down there that they're looking at, guys across the country, Javonte Barnes in Nevada, a couple guys in Texas. So they've got plenty of irons in the fire. So it would be surprising to me if they did not sign two quote unquote top guys. But that's kind of the way that you're looking at it. If they could land a class of say Singleton and Pettaway or Ramon Brown or something like that, that would be extraordinary at that position.
Remember, Penn State signed back-to-back recruiting classes in 19 and 20 with multiple blue-chip running back prospects. No high school running backs came in with this class, and you brought in a senior-eligible player in John Lovett out of Baylor. He'll be gone next year. I think it's a safe bet to assume that at least one of the other running backs in this room right now will not be in the mix on campus going into next year. So there's a lot to like about the path here. If you are an incoming freshman, it's something that I'm sure that they will sell. I want to ask you this, though. I'm going to revise this a little bit. If you got one of those guys on board, let's say a Singleton for the sake of this conversation, and you're getting late in the season, you're getting toward that December signing period, and you're getting close to the point where the transfer portal is going to fill up again, is that another spot where Penn State you think would seriously consider saying, we'll pass on the second high school running back because maybe the guy we want is somewhere else and we don't want to reach for someone, and we'll go with this a transfer guy? I mean, do you think this is a spot they could go and hit in the transfer portal again later in the cycle? I know this is a hard one to answer, but to me, it seems like maybe you could bring in a combination of a high school prospect and a guy who's played a couple or 3 years of college ball.
You could do that. Yeah. I mean, I don't see that going in that direction, because I think the way that the cycle is going to go is that these guys are going to take their visits in June, and then you're going to see, you know, you're going to see Ramon Brown make a decision. You're going to see Singleton make a decision, Hampton make a decision. You're going to see a lot of these guys come off the board. And I think the way that the numbers and the logic work out, I think it's probably a chance that you go into September with two running backs. So we'll see what happens with that. I mean, it's obviously not always cut and dry. You look back a couple of years, and at this point in the cycle, I guess you would have known Kevon Lee, but Keziah Holmes was still kind of coming onto the radar here. So that's why
they hadn't been to campus. You can say that much.
Kevon Lee at that point took an official in April. That's why I looked at my watch to see what date it actually was. But Kevon Lee took an early official, and then Keziah Holmes took a June official, I believe.
Right.
So that's kind of how that worked out. So, you know, that's why I always throw that wild card with Florida in there, because you know, nobody really recruits Florida like Jaywon Sider. So, and he hasn't been able to get anybody on campus for the last year and a half, basically. So, so we'll see what happens with that. But you got a great crop. I mean, this is in terms of comparing 2021 and 2022 for what's out there with running backs. To me, there's no question that there's that 2022 is the way to go. So you take two from one and zero from the other, and you end up on the good side of that.
You've got an outstanding crop of running backs. You've got an outstanding recruiter and coach in Jaywon Sider, and you've got a really impressive recent track record to point to at the position. It feels like it's going to figure itself out at running back for Penn State at the end of this day.
And the way that the cycle sets up with these June officials and things like that, there is a sense of urgency there. It's not like a domino situation where you've got one in the board or one on the board, but these running backs looking at where everybody else is visiting. Katron Allen, a guy from IMG, is going to take a visit as well. So you get six or seven running backs, really good running backs that you really like a lot, to visit campus. I mean, I think that can work itself out in shorter time than you would have expected in a typical cycle.
Question number two takes our attention back to the 2021 recruiting class. And here it is. Hey, fellas, wondering what the view has been on Landon Tengwall since he enrolled and if he has a chance to break through this fall. Love the pod and the site. By the way, Fitz, Kushwa makes some good beer.
Kushwa. Where's my Kushwa hat? I'm looking around here. I got my Shy Bear hat. My Kushwa hat must be downstairs. Kushwa is a brewery in Williamsport, Maryland that does some fantastic stuff. You know, disclaimer here, I know the guys that started it, so they're pretty awesome guys. So if you're in that area, check it out. By the way, it's in State College now. I saw it at Pletcher's last week. So it's if you can get some and you'll enjoy it. But Landon Tengwall, this is probably a question from Maryland, from the DMV, given the Kushwa reference. Landon Tengwall is a guy. He stepped in, had a shoulder injury in spring camp. So that kind of took him out for those last two scrimmages that we saw. But before that, just progressing as you would think, came in very high floor. And that's not to say, this is probably something where you take away when you say high floor, you think low ceiling. Well, he's still got a pretty high ceiling. And this guy can move, put his foot in the ground and move people. Technically, he's advanced as any lineman that they've brought in under Franklin. I mean, this kid was ready to play college football as a junior in high school. You don't say that very often about a high school prospect, but he's going to have to catch up to the speed, going to have to catch up to some things. Of course, they didn't play in the fall, so that kind of sucks for him. But in terms of advancement, he came in ready to go. He's done the drills for years. He's done the lifting for years, the position specific lifting for drills. So he really came in ready to go. He's a guy that I think can play all five spots for Penn State if they need him to. Would not mind seeing him end up on the interior, because that means you're probably doing something right at tackle. But I think he starts at tackle and begins his career at tackle, can work his way into the two deep. We mentioned that 2020 group that came in that all redshirted. Everybody redshirted last year. Olufoshan was probably the furthest along out of them. And I think Tengwall is probably right at that level. I think he's ahead of some of those other guys that he came in behind, which is a credit to him. I don't think he breaks through and starts as a freshman, but I think we do see him out on that field.
I agree with you. And I wonder if it's kind of a Caden Wallace situation from a couple of years ago, where initially they say, this is a guy that we could green light if we wanted to and needed to, but then you get through the first month. And if you're healthy, you say, are we going to burn a year of eligibility on a talent like this just to go out for field goal, for field goal lineups. So I think it's an interesting kind of, study in this new redshirt world that we're living in. How do they deal with the 4-game threshold? Injuries could play a role there. But as you said, a guy that we would have loved to have seen in the spring scrimmage action was sidelined a bit, but based on what I've gathered, not anything that would have held him out for an extended period of time. And we'll see if it was a real game, if he would have been available. It was just a practice in Beaver Stadium. By the way, Landon Tengwall, Sean, I'm with you. I mean, just watching, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus from that group that we saw in scrimmage action, but just from what I know about Landon watching him play, it's been a while since we saw him in live action, but I'm with you. I would put him above everybody in that preceding class. Olufoshan, I'd like to see them really line up side by side and get some reps together. I saw Olufoshan do some nice things. He was the next right tackle in behind Caden Wallace during those scrimmages. Would have liked to have seen a look at Landon Tengwall to get a good comparison between those two players, because that could be your battle for a second team tackle.
Yeah, and I kind of said earlier in the episode about Robert Martin and how well coached he was and how, technically sound and everything he was. Landon Tengwall is a Division I athlete, high Division I athlete. So that kind of takes that worry away there. But yeah, he's just so technically sound, and I'm looking forward to see what he can do out there, and looking forward to see what kind of growth he has left in that. That was kind of the knock on him. So we had him as a really high prospect. I don't know if we had him as a 5-star, but we had him really high very early. And it was kind of like, okay, some other guys have a higher athletic ceiling. This kid's still really freaking good. I think he ended up top 75, top 80, something like that. But yeah, he's got a ton of potential. I'd love to see him at center. I've put the Barrett Jones comparison on him before, and Barrett Jones, if you're getting anything close to Barrett Jones, you're getting yourself a really good college lineman. So excited to see what the next couple of years bring. I think he's a guy that can help them out and be a multi-year starter.
Got some insight on Tengwall there. I got some insight on some beer. And we move toward our next advertising opportunity here from their third question, Sean. Gentlemen, in your opinion, what is the best local coffee shop in Happy Valley? I'm partial to the Cheese Shop as the best drip coffee, but personally love Webster's as the best environment in a coffee shop. You guys got any opinion here? I felt a bit spoiled with coffee options when I was in State College. Well, Sean, this is a nice little curveball.
Coffee is such a big part of this show. Like usually when
we set
this
up,
when we set this up, it's like, okay, are you ready to go? Yep. Got to pour a cup and I'm ready to go. I'm just a regular coffee guy. It's so funny. My wife is big on, you know, the lattes and things like that. And it's just like, give me an entire pot of coffee and I'm good to go. So I don't really go out for coffee as much. My wife has kind of, there's a new one in town, Crust and Crumb, that my wife has, I think, kept in business through the pandemic. So you're welcome. But they're fantastic. They do great baked goods as well. Quite a list here in terms of what's mentioned. Let's see, the cheese shop is very tough to park, but I agree. They do a great job. A guy I used to play poker with, Don Goldberg, is always down in there, always talking somebody's ear off. But I like Rothrock. That's kind of on the outskirts of town, which makes it easier for me because I'm not driving downtown every day. It's so funny to talk to my friends that live in cities and I complain about traffic and it's like six cars in a line waiting at a stoplight. But I'm a big fan of Rothrock. I don't do the thing where a lot of writers will go and sit at Webster's or sit at Saints and do that thing. No. I sit at home and do it and brew my own coffee. But yeah, I've really impressed with the coffee scene in the last couple of years. And by the way, it's not a sponsor. So this is just a freewheeling. We'd like to get those curveballs in there sometimes. So if you have questions that aren't just, hey, give us football information, we like to talk about those too.
Especially local stuff here. I'll give a shout out to, you know, I'm in a different area of the Valley than you. I'm right outside of downtown Bellefonte now in our new home. And I've been driving down probably on a weekly basis on the weekend to get down to My Buzz Cafe right there by Talleyrand Park. This is out of your location, Sean, but great coffee. I usually get a shot of espresso thrown in there. They got what they do. I like, they make the ice cubes out of coffee, so you don't get the watered down stuff. I go iced coffee every time. So I'll give them a shout out. They got awesome sandwiches too, breakfast sandwiches. By the way, if you think you own the best coffee shop in Happy Valley, reach out to 24/7 Sports. Pay us and we will change our opinion real fast.
We are very much for sale. It's been cool. Like, I get my beans from Rothrock and things like that. Oh, I absolutely whiffed on this. I will put in an endorsement. Good Day Cafe on Hamilton, a fantastic business. Go there, patronize them, do whatever you got to do, help out that business, because it's an awesome setup. I will let you guys Google that one on your own, but it's a fantastic business run by fantastic people, and it's really the first place I should have mentioned there is Good Day Cafe. Definitely check that out.
Rest assured, this podcast is powered by coffee on a weekly basis, and we'll get to some more questions in the Apple Podcast, out of Apple Podcast, as you send them our way. Got three up there, so keep them coming. We appreciate it, and a fun kind of slate of questions there, kind of hitting to all different sorts of stuff. Sean, anything else to add? We said this was going to be a nice, tidy 30-minute episode. We've doubled it per usual. Yeah, I don't mind. It's nice, though. It's time to get outside for both of us.
I like the retrospect aspect of this. It can't always be, hey, what's going on? Because it's, you know, it's frankly mid-May and there's not much going on. So I like the retrospect aspect of this, looking back at the 2017 class. Hopefully we can do it some more. We've leaned so much. We were texting about this earlier. We've leaned so much on that 2018 class because of the accolades that came in with. And, you know, it's the draft class that just went out and things like that.
And the drama. There's been some drama with that group.
Yeah, and we don't really think about some of those other classes. So it was nice to look back at a different class and sort of change it up a little bit.
Yeah, good stuff. We will catch up with you guys next week as we roll into mid-May and continue to approach this big-time recruiting outburst that's coming our way June 1st. Stay up to date on the latest coverage from the recruiting trail and from the Penn State football on Lions247.com. We'll see you on the message boards. We'll see you on the site, and we'll talk to you real soon. On behalf of Sean, I am Tyler Donahue. Catch you next week.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.